And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm an emergency podcast, Andy.
The champ's not dead yet.
Nope, not at all. Admittedly, the Sunday night after a Friday night is not exactly emergency podcast territory, but it's very much smug, happy, and the era's not done yet podcast.
Yeah. Definitely, certainly better than the Thursday night that we've managed after a few of the tougher losses. But this was a fun game. This was a really tough game. It reminded me of maybe the Port Adelaide game of 2019 in terms of winning in adverse circumstances. Yeah. It was pretty good fun.
Yeah, it was. And it was quite like the St. Kilda game in a way that so the first half was excruciating. We all know it. Like, it wasn't nearly as bad as it felt at the time because we were fluffing shots. We weren't taking our chances. It felt we were, holding the ball was no longer being applied in the Bulldogs forward line, which I think cost us two reasonable shots a goal. And we did in the first quarter, in fairness, get done -5 in the inside 50s. But the second quarter, sort of in hindsight, the ship had righted. It just didn't feel that way because the scoreboard was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was a difficult... Yeah, it felt like it could have gone two ways. Like that second half Richmond surge is sort of obvious in only in hindsight. Like we've had games where we haven't been able to respond. You know, it's a threadbare team,
and we had a very plausible excuse, right?
A midfield with Prestia, Lambert, Martin all missing, right? That's a lot for any team to have to cover. But I think also, among other things, it was a pretty good coaching effort.
Yeah, well, you don't come back from that unless you're extremely well coached, right? So, look.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, a team just like that was extraordinary. What was it, 16-17-0 in inside 50 run in the third quarter against a team that was undefeated? I mean, that's the similarity to the St. Kilda game, is we just, there was a period of the game where we just established the most incredible dominance. And, you know, they were doing the same things that most teams do when they break against us, are kicking the ball out of bounds. It looked like there was this impossible, the Richmond defense was like this impossible labyrinth and they couldn't get the ball past halfway. Like, it is extraordinary how good they are. Like, I mean, you can shut down a team like that in AFL, but to shut down a high-scoring, highly effective team that has been ripping through their other opposition, I mean, that third quarter was absolutely astounding.
All right, and look, we saw at patches just how good and creative the Dogs can be with their, particularly with their hands. But would you like to know who I think was a key player?
Well, I guess you can't say Nyank because that's what I'm going to be all about. So there's got to be someone else. No, who?
This is a very deep cut. I think that Ryan Mansell,
that's all I was going to guess.
Nice. He held his own in a couple of one-on-one contests early, deep in our defence. That, you know, really high pressure, high leverage situations, and that I think helped give Dimmer the confidence to throw Baker to half forward, and I think that was a pretty inspired move.
I love that theory. Before I forget, just on Mansell, something I really noticed. At least four times in the game, he isn't absolutely elite at clattering into his opponent so they both fall over. You watch it, Jerry, and you know, when he's often playing against one of the opposition's best forwards, because he's got long limbs and he knows his role at the moment, and his role is to be a defensive stopper.
He's quick, yeah.
Yep, and he gets the footy occasionally, but not a lot, but 9 on the weekend. But yeah, he's just very good at, like, he in almost one way, like, you know, and another thing that's happened, Nick, further to your point, is, you know, Broad has been filled up because Mansell's now, I think he's, you know, partly playing the ultra defensive role. That's freeing up Broad up, and Broad had an extraordinary 25 touches as well. You know, it's
he did. It was Broad. Like, yeah, I think he has taken his game to another level. Like, his running numbers were off the charts, both in distance covered and repeat sprints. But sort of he's, you know, he was in a more creative role. And look, his kicking still has its moments, but defensively, he was really good. I thought it was one of the best games of his career.
Oh, absolutely. By the way, I love his new hair. As you know, Nick, I'm sporting some longer locks these days myself, and yeah, Nathan Broad is looking you know, quite stylish at the moment. But yeah, to your point about Baker, absolutely, Baker set up the comeback. Our first two goals of the third when we really got on the roll. He was the one who. Like he had the instrumental possession that set up the goal, and he also, Nick, had you know, he had 15 touches, but he had 73 pressure acts, which is, you know, when any normal human being is playing, he led the led the game this week, but you know, it's not enormous by Jack Graham standards, but he, you know, 9 out of 10 games with teams without Jack Graham, and that would be the team, the game leading. So, Baker was – I completely agree with that analysis. And, well, Nick, do you remember that we had a debate with some of our friends and I was poo-pooing a bit Baker as a center square player? I'm starting to reconsider because, he wasn't in the center square for this game, but, geez, he's got round-the-ground tricks, doesn't he? He's definitely not – he started as a forward. That's what he was in junior. But, he's learnt from the back line and he's gone to an even higher level as a forward.
Yeah, it was a really good game. As you said, the whole defence was playing well. Like, I loved the Bolter versus Shacky matchup.
Well, Shacky certainly didn't.
yeah. But the whole just in thinking about the Bulldogs as premiership contenders, like they didn't have an elite goal to goal line when they won in 2016. So you can win without having the star key position players, but it does put you at a disadvantage. Like, I thought the Alex Keith versus Tom Lynch matchup was a bloodbath. I thought Bruce did only a little bit. Norton was their only semi-dangerous forward. Yeah, I just thought we had most of their key position players covered.
Yeah, and because we were able to neutralise the mids, you know, Bont was MIA for large periods. And, you know, in the last nickel, when they were playing Bont on Marlon, and I'll just later about the rucks, but, bring it on. Like, I mean, if you said to Dimmer at the start of the game, they're going to play Bont one-on-one to a sort of an even draw with Marlon, like, yes, you know, what a fantastic deal for us that, you know, our supplement, whatever that mid-season draft pick, is they're so worried about him now that they're playing Bont on him. Fantastic.
Was that Marlon's best game since the 2019 grand final?
Well, I mean, statistically, it's not. You'll never beat the 2019 grand final. He, you know, every kick turned into a goal. But, you know, that was just sometimes you get a good rating. I think, like, actually, Pickett's and Nank's ratings were not off the chart for that game. They were about mid-level. And, you know, we had more hit-outs to – oh, no, actually, Martin beat – Steph Martin beat Nank in the ruck. But the – their physical presence, both of them, is just extraordinary. Yeah, exactly. And it's because if you're watching the game, it's Nick, this is against my core principles to use this phrase, but it's something statistics can't measure. And the hurt and the pressure that those two guys put on, and every single player on the other team would always know where those two guys are. I just love watching them, Nick. Like, I think I said to you before the game, my friend, like, when we're a bit pessimistic, the only thing I want to, if I get one thing out of tonight, I want to see Nankervis and Pickett hit some guys. And, you know, it's so obvious what they're doing, and their pressure's so high that all the other teams would be noticing it. And it's such a statement, you know, we are now, for all those years when we were crappy in the 80s, and, you know, we used to get pushed around by the bigger, stronger teams.
The 90s. Yeah. And zeros. Yes.
We are now the team that does the... I mean, it's fair, you know. I can't remember. Like, they don't cheap shot, but they, when they put on a legal hit, they really make sure you remember it. And God, Nick, I love it. I just love watching it so much. We are such a team of badasses.
I know. And look, we don't... And I'm actually struggling to think of a ruckman that we've had who's been that much of a physical enforcer. Like, Angus Graham had big tackle stats. Ivy was a huge presence, but even Ivy, I don't think quite brought as much pain as Nank does.
No, the closest, the scariest ruckman we've had recently is Stafford. But Stafford doesn't have, because Nank's got a huge. Nank had a huge has a huge tank, and that's, you know, part of his charm. And Nick, the sort of the moment with about 2 minutes left to play in the third quarter, and, you know, partly this is perhaps me over projecting because I've got no tank at all, but like, Nank's a big guy and he's a heavyweight. He's the size of a large heavyweight boxer. And there's they don't have as much stamina as the little guys. And there was a moment in the third where he's got a Bulldogs player and a tackle. He slings him to the ground to just put a bit of extra muscle on it, but that's a huge anaerobic burst. Then he gets up and he's straight away rocking against Stephen Martin. He outstrengths Stephen Martin, taps it down, which so most people would just be exhausted then because it's the equivalent of, you know, sort of max benching sort of 10 times. And then he gets a second Bulldogs tackle. And he marked before. Like, he just follows up, and it was physical pressure after physical pressure. So you're never free from him when he's around. He's such an admirable athlete.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I expect you'll do well in the coaches' votes. Speaking of coaches' votes, we have we've talked about, you know, Tom Lynch, perhaps, you know, being a guy that needs a pat on the back sometimes, surprisingly so for someone who looks like a Greek god. But I think. You know, Dimmer really forcefully backing him during the week, and combined with a opponent who's not nearly as good as the one he had the week before, that was a pretty dominating effort, if not for his goal kicking.
Oh, it was extraordinarily dominant. It was a huge. It was Tom Lynch at his best. I was wondering, Nick, in future whether they'll get sort of a member of the Richmond media team to sort of put on a fake mustache and go into Dimmer's press conferences and say, Mr. Hardwick, we think Tom Lynch isn't playing very well. Or people are saying that Tom Lynch is stealing his. And so just set Dimmer up to do a Tom Lynch rant every week. Because, I mean, if that's as well as he's going to play every week, like, you'd love that Tom Lynch every week, wouldn't you? So, yeah, it was quite the statement game after it made Dimmer look like the genius man manager.
I think as is our want, we've gone too long without talking about Shai Bolton.
Or Shai.
Hate that.
Yeah, I think I've done it more in the history of this podcast, so it's probably just my 10th score involvements, very high in the ratings, like kick the, you know, when the time kicked three goals, when the whips were cracking, he really got us going. Yeah, also one goal was admittedly sort of junk time sealer, but yeah, he's adding zero. He's not adding zeros, but he's adding money to that contract, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's a key player for us. Yeah, it's easy to identify six different players who'd be top five best and fairest, but yeah, he'd really be top five best and fairest. Having Shai and Baker playing well is the flip side of, you know, George and Rioli really didn't have very much impact, and Arts was solid, but yeah, I think just in terms of that electricity in the forward line and making things happen, I think those guys were part of, a huge part of why we won.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the spark, the X Factor was all coming from them. On Arts, he did some dumb things on the game. That push in the back that cost us a goal was just completely unnecessary. Like, the umpire probably interpreted it incorrectly, but, you know, Arts didn't need to do that. There was, you know, there was the out of bounds and the full one run and break when he held up play. He's just going. But yeah, good on him. He converted Lynch's goal well. The one other thing about Arts is I noticed in the game he was. Do you remember the moment when Jack got pushed a Bulldogs player into Arts and it was a blatant free kick? And Arts, all he saw that he was running back with a flight of the ball, and he tried to mark it, and the Bulldogs player poleaxed him. Mm. And he was sitting there remonstrating with the umpire, and Tom Lynch actually came over with him and told him he now shut up and pushed him off. Because, you know, in fairness to Arts, he didn't know that Rimwalt had pushed the Bulldogs player into him. But, Tommy Lynch actually stepped up, and I believe he apologized to the umpire. He sort of waved his hand up to the umpire. So, yeah, but even Big Bad, Tommy Lynch has his manners too.
In terms of it being a well-coached team, like it is really a redemption year for Dimmer in proving that he can do it without Carousella and Lepic. But I think the
I get so confused now about Dimmer's reorganization. Yeah, I just get confused with how Dimmer's going to prove he can do it without now. Like, basically, he's basically going to have to make him alone in the coaching box until Dimmer can prove that he is actually the mind behind all the premierships. Giuseppe's next out the door. Anyway, sorry, go on.
I think it's either him or Andrew McWalter who deserves the credit for this. But, you know, the first quarter, I thought we were struggling in the centre square, but that got a lot better during the game. And the player with the most centre clearances for Richmond, Riley Collard-Dawkins, part of the solution.
So what did you think of Sparky's game? Frankly, I sort of thought it as it was quite Sparky as advertised. As in, his contested numbers were quite high. It was at double figures, and then he got almost nothing on the spread, which is sort of almost exactly like his earliest games in the VFL were. But, you know, he cracked in. He did things. Would have been interesting. I believe it was at the end of the third or the second, where he got an end hand pass and he was breaking towards goal about 70 out. Would have been nice if he actually had a chance to get a kick there, but the siren went. It was pretty good. Like, it was a tough game, and he got a chance to win a few good contests. So I think it's too early to tell. He hasn't overcome. His strengths were evident and his weaknesses were evident in his first game. So I don't know.
Yeah. His strengths are things that are hard to find, though. The winning centre clearances at AFL level is a genuinely hard thing to do. And just having the body that stands up against, you know, mega athletes like Bond, that's important. Like, he just looked comfortable with the physicality of the level. So yeah, he's got to win more ball, but he does very useful things well. So you're starting from a good base.
Yeah, and sort of the flip side of that is he will keep getting opportunities now that the Skips looks like he's got a fairly chronic hamstring.
That was really disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually really hoping that we'd subbed it just to give Patrick Nash a run in a win, which would have been really clever, because the skip looked really funny in his interview post, and there was something about his emotion, but when he was asked about the hamstring, and with hindsight, I think the emotion was, I'm really happy that we won, and I want to make this about the team, but I'm very personally devastated, and I'm just hiding it, because, you know, when you've done that many hamstrings, you just don't know whether you'll ever come back. not to mention that. I know exactly how he feels. The interesting thing was about his game, aside from being very good, and he led the team in clearances, very solid game. So clearances rather than center clearances, like you were talking about with RCD, but clearances around the ground. Skip was very good, plenty of pressure acts. Interesting, we subbed him off in the first 3 minutes of the game. And I was actually wondering when he was injured, but no, we do these hyper-quick rotations with him. So it's not like we weren't managing him, and his game time was very low again. It was in the low 60s. But, yeah, it seems like even that is too much for his hamstrings, because it went late, you know, because, you know, going late like that is a sign it couldn't handle the load.
Yeah, so, fatigue injury. Yeah,
so, like, let's just cross our fingers, because, you know, the skip might be old, and he might be a hackneyed social media follow, but geez, we need him in the midfield.
I know. It was almost a shock to have two players in the centre of the circle singing their song for their first win, and you know, poor old Chris Nash. He's I think that was his. Is that his fourth game?
Patrick,
you know, he's for you know, young players, you know, have had the luxury of coming into a, you know, a very good and a settled team, and unfortunately he's come in some of the darker moments, like the Geelong loss in 2019. But yeah, look, it was nice for him. It was great for Riley. Mantle doing his job like that. We've spoken about, you know, the younger brigade has to step up. And yeah, other than Jack Ross, I think they did.
Yeah, I thought Jack Ross's game. It was pretty poor, wasn't it? Yeah.
He cracked in, and he really competed. But yeah, he needs to win more ball.
Yeah, I'm like he was. Yes, exactly. There's just two final points I wanted to make about the game, Nick, and they're both they're not no great insight, but you know, back to the point of Marlon is the, you know, has been he's a lump of quartz or granite, like, and it's been obvious since the moment he knocked out CCJ running back with a flight of the ball. Like, Marlon was running back with a fly ball. That's normally when you get hurt, and he hurt the much larger, much more muscular Rackman in a VFL game. Like, the man just hit so hard, and he landed on his back and got winded in a ruck contest. I believe it was in the fourth quarter, and I was shocked when he didn't get straight back up, because I just have I've just got such respect for the man as being just this, like, one of the hardest footballers I've ever seen at Richmond. And God, I love watching him. And the second bit was, Nick, just a little bit, there was the commentators were calling, you know, the former cricketer Brashaw was calling it, and he said, a couple of Western Bulldogs said, oh, and a little bit of Harlem Globetrotters, and the Western Bulldogs were pissing around, and Liam Baker just destroyed the Bulldog in a tackle and threw him out of bounds. And it was just such a Richmondy moment, it was such a nice summary of the game that, the Bulldogs had their quick attacking hand passing game, and we destroyed it. Very, very satisfying game.
It was very satisfying. Look, the only other note I had from the game was that when Basher kicked his goal, they mentioned, you know, he's kicked 48 goals in his long career. I was glad that they stopped themselves before saying something silly like, oh, a few more important than that one, because, yeah, he's kicked more important goals than that one.
Funnily enough, I noticed that hole there. It was almost like they were about to say it, and I already had the 2017 grand final first quarter goal in my head, and they didn't say it. But yeah, my exact same thought process went on. By the way, you could arguably put that goal down to Tom Lynch, because the commentator said, they didn't touch it. Yeah, very fair enough. But the reason they didn't touch it was because the Bulldogs defender, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which one, was going to chop Tom Lynch's arms and wasn't focused on the ball. So he was so worried about Tom Lynch was the reason it got through.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a deeply satisfying game. A game that was less deeply satisfying. And look at it. While our VFLW affiliate put Melbourne's going from strength to strength. Sadly, the VFL is suffering. You know, as happens when you get some injuries at senior level. But yeah, they had a pretty tough loss down at Werribee.
Yeah, not. I mean, we're all excited to see Eggs get 26 touches and zero tackles. A non-listed player was our second highest possession getter. Good for him. I don't know. Like, it's too early to know. Did you see any bright sparks at all? I mean, it was good that Stacky got 16 and one goal.
Look, the two bright spots from reading reports from people who were at the game were Stacks. Stacks' fitness is steadily building. Like, Stack, for all the unfortunate incidences, like, he does. He has shown that when he really puts his head down and works really hard, he can build his fitness up pretty well. And yeah, look, his returns probably ahead of where I thought it would be. I don't think he's a million miles away from senior footy. And another guy who's had a bit of an interrupted start to the season with injury and suspension, but yeah, Hugo Ralph-Smith got good reports as well. He's not a guy who, even as a junior, racked up enormous amounts of possessions, but he's a really top quality athlete and, you know, a 70 meter player when he wins the ball. Look, the one thing that I would potentially find quite a, I don't know if upsetting's the right word. Maybe it's the right word. But if Morris Rioli Jr. made his debut at the expense of Daniel, that would be unfortunate. But when I see that he's had 8 tackles, I think, yeah, they're going to notice that at selection committee.
Yeah, and Rioli was being, I mean, yeah, that would be that's I hadn't thought of that, but that is a really good point. And you know, which one are you going to go first, George or Rioli? Well, probably George has been in the better form overall. But I think the Stack point is Stack might get in front of Rioli because they might legitimately think Rioli's still got a lot of development to go, because small forward is such an integral part of our team. Fascinating, though. I wouldn't be surprised if that pulled the trigger. And obviously, probably what's going to happen is Cochin comes in. Martin comes in for Cochin.
Martin and Vlosten are apparently good to go this week.
Yeah. Do you think is Vlosten going to come straight back in, though?
Apparently so. Apparently, he had a really good running session on Friday.
Oh, geez, we're getting good, Nick. I'm getting excited.
Look,
does that mean poor old Mansell misses out? What a shame.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah,
well, I mean, the backline's playing bloody great.
It's playing really well. Look, the other VFL player I wanted to mention is Noah Cumberland, who made his return from a knee reconstruction. And look, he only had 8 disposals, but one of them was a super brave mark in the goal square, and he kicked a couple of goals. And yeah, good on him.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Now, can we go back to that point, Nick, just about – so I had a thought. What if Flossie comes in and we kick Bakes to the forward line? And we drop one of the forwards for Flossie?
Yeah, I can see that. You'd think Naish – sorry, Nat, I mean, Naish was 23rd man, but Ross is one obvious one to go, but yeah, then you're looking at one of Rioli, Arts, Mansell or Riley to go out. So, tough decision.
Yep. Now, Cats. 7
and I So we've been death riding them all season because we've got their first round draft pick, and after an up and down seven rounds, their record is virtually identical to ours. Particularly after two extremely close games against the Lions and Swans that probably should have had their results reversed because of poor umpiring decisions. They absolutely flogged the Eagles a fortnight ago. But yeah, they're in an interesting spot.
Yeah, I mean, the age is an issue, whether they can play in the MCG. They basically look pretty crap except for the absolute demolishment of the Eagles. But that's real. Like, beating the crap out of a team is that's what good teams do.
Yeah, the Eagles don't look great, but they do look good.
And as you rightly point out, the Swans game they did statistically win, so they're in good form.
They dominated that game.
And, I mean, hilarious. Let's just roll around for a second, Nick. That ball probably went about 25 metres. Jeremy Cameron, he wouldn't have necessarily kicked it, by the way, because he wouldn't have been able to go around the corner. He's a left-footer, it was a left-footer side. But, you know, it's no guarantee he kicked it. But I actually thought that at the end of the game, as the siren went, the Swans were about to get a holding the ball called against them too.
I wondered that as well.
So yeah, it's
a big call to make, but yeah,
it was hilarious and deeply satisfying. I actually think, Nick, the deck riding is probably redundant because they'll probably make the finals, and then it all becomes what happens in the finals about where they finish.
I know, but it still brings me joy.
If them finishing ninth would just be so sweet,
delicious. Yeah, they've got a few injuries. I mean, which you'd expect with the oldest team in the league, even with Dangerfield and Higgins out on the weekend, they still had half the team having played 150 games. A few of their younger players like O'Connor and Colajasny are out as well, so they'll probably five maybe six guys out there on the next weekend who weren't there on grand final day. Obviously some, Harry Taylor and Gary Ablett pulled stumps. They brought in Isaac Smith, who's playing, exactly as he did for Hawthorn, as a very good player. Jeremy Cameron as the foil to Hawkins, which after a pretty injury-interrupted start to the season. But those two haven't quite got their chemistry yet. But, yeah, it's still a really dangerous pair.
Yeah, absolutely. And both have given us trouble in the past. Hawkins, it's funny, even people who don't give a damn about Ruckman will usually talk about that kind of technical side of the game, talk about Tomahawk's forward line rucking, which, it'll be a problem for Nank because even Tomahawk can, as strong as Nank is, Tomahawk is extraordinarily strong at forward line rucking. So, yeah, look, I just – and we've – Fenner, thank God Dimmer's better – been better at coaching this year than we have been at prognosticating, because I think we're below 500 in our predictions, well, at least in the meaningful the games which were, we pretty Carlton good on us, but we were insufferably arrogant against Sydney, at least I was.
It was terrible.
We were
28 point favourites for the Swans game. So everyone else was as well.
And at least last week we were medium term optimistic, but short term pessimistic. But we certainly weren't predicting what happened. So yeah, but I'm optimistic again, Nick. So just shoot. I actually think the 7.5 line is unders.
Yeah. So that's we're 7.5. Look,
we're favourites, sorry.
Yeah,
I think that's too long.
If you want reasons to worry, the Cats have been quite unlike themselves, whereas sort of a lot of their underlying stats, they're still a fantastic clearance team. They have the biggest disposal differential in the competition, third biggest inside 50 differential. Their opposition has had the least kicks of any team, but they've been let down by uncharacteristically inefficient efforts, both in defence and attack. And that sort of thing comes and goes, and I think they are capable of quite a bit better than what they've shown.
Yeah, and they've got the firepower, as you pointed out.
Yeah, Jack Henry's got better as a defender, and Tom Stewart, is a All Australian level player. They're small forwards, probably similar to ours in terms of quality, in being more role players rather than stars. But yeah, they're a really dangerous team.
Yeah, and look, they're probably highly motivated after what Absolutely. Happened in the second half of the grand final. Like that, like when you have that done to you, the thing, mate, I'd never admit this, but they're not alone, right? This team has an extraordinary ability to shut teams, to just systematically destroy teams, sort of halfway through a game. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Friday night, we'll be there. Exciting, big game. Not the end of the world if we lose. But it's a bit unfair. Like, in some ways, they're a very admirable team, but I hate these guys. Like, they're our biggest rivals. So, I really want to beat them.
We'd look.
I want an 8-goal win.
Yeah, I would love them. They've had a better regular season record against us than in finals. But even during the recent era. But yeah, we don't. We've ended their season repeatedly, this would be huge.
And Dimmer's not going to bring his A coaching game out for like a minor regular season game, but whereas Chris Scott will throw the kitchen sink, but yeah.
Oh no, they're both insanely competitive people. Look, I'm teasing. It should be a great game.
Oh look, I think Dimmer will Dimmer might sort of walk across, still finish his hamburger, looking very nonchalant to Chris Scott. these preseason games you can really get a lot out of. I'm really hoping to build our fitness from this game. Sorry, I'll stop now. I'm really looking forward. It should be a great game. MCG Friday night lights tonight, two games in a row.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
We're talking about three flags by 2020. Fitzroy's played in more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010, Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey, he does. Carlton,
Weston to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. Non free kick, surely.
In the final home of the away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Martin's good. He scored. He shoots. It's the stuff of legend. Justin Martin confirms his status at the top of the game.
The pile of sirens gone. Like the tiger of old, the storm and revolt.